I'm Andrew Haynes, and this is the Fair Game Podcast, the place where we talk about all things golf. For this episode, we have two new brands we've been following for a while, Dimple and Divot and July Sporting Goods. Both brands are founded by design-minded golfers with a focus on making quality goods that can last a lifetime. Let's get into it. Can you say welcome to the Fair Game Podcast in Norwegian?
Velkommen til Fair Game Podcasten.
That sounds chill. I feel like now I'm always curious about people that grew up in other countries. Did you learn two languages in school or?
Yep.
Got it. Why don't we need to do that here in America.
You probably should. It's yeah. It's because we started so early. It starts in the second we enter school, it starts. So from the age of five, we start learning English.
Nice.
Almost feels like, you know, you're not really feeling like you're learning it as much as you're just like it travels with you as you grow older. And then suddenly it's almost like your native tongue.
It's amazing. Chris, do you speak any other languages or just English?
No, not even a little bit. I think I took Spanish in seventh grade. And by that time, it was just too far gone. But I tried to take a little bit of Italian a couple years ago and got by when I went over to Italy. But that was just, you know, ordering some wine and
learning a new language when you're an adult is a completely different thing. It's
hard. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very hard.
Yeah.
But I did my graduate degree in New York. So that also helped.
Oh, nice. Awesome. Where did you go? Did you go to NYU?
SVA.
SVA. Interesting. Where are you a design kid? Get out of here. Hold on.
I'm a copywriter by trade, screenwriter. And then I worked in film and television. And nice. Then I have a dad who's very much an entrepreneur. And I've always wanted to understand more of the business side of things and not just be a creative. And then I came across this course at SVA taught by Debbie Millman, which is a branding graduate degree. And mm-hmm. I moved over in 2016 and just learned a whole lot about how design and business works together. So it was, yeah, very interesting.
Nice. That's cool. Debbie Millman is she's a legend.
She's a legend. She's tough.
Yeah. Just roasting, tearing up work.
Yeah. She's tough.
I will say I don't miss those days from school. So I went to Savannah College of Art and Design, and I remember the critiques, and a lot of it was bullshit because we were just kids and we just felt like critiques were just this opportunity to say like negative shit. The days of just really harsh opinions, on one hand, they were good training for the real world because clients just say stupid things and ask you to do stupid things all the time. And you just have to learn how to deal with it. But I don't miss school at all.
No, they had this fire hose philosophy, which they called it, which was like, we'll just completely drown you guys in work and you'll never feel like you're stressed out again. That was their whole, that was the philosophy.
That works.
Yeah.
It kind of works.
And look, there is some truth to that for sure. Like I think it's so funny because not with my current job, like, you know, I have a healthier work-life balance. Like I was up working late on some app stuff last night just because I wanted to. But I remember previous jobs, like working in advertising and design, where like it's 8 o'clock and you're still at the office and I don't know, account director or the owner of the agency comes over and says, I hate everything. The meeting's tomorrow at 10. So you end up staying till 3 or 4 in the morning. And a lot of that was just normal culture. So on one hand, it was extremely toxic and extremely unhealthy. But on the other hand, it does push you, and I can understand, and not just in work, but in any area of life. Like, I know this is a golf podcast. You can compare it to golf. Like those guys, you know, the pros, the ones at the highest level of the game, they hit so many golf balls, and they do it in all the conditions, whenever, like, I'm tired, it's cold, it's hot, whatever. When you get to the point where you have to hit that shot, it's not that hard. You're like, I've done this 1,000 times. So I think it's
with you're kind of numb to it. So
yeah, you're like, oh, okay. So I'm like, oh, another little quick little late night. Okay, cool. And you just do it. So it's an essential.
I think Earl Woods did that to Tiger.
Yeah.
Yeah. He did that whole stress thing.
Right. Just like fucking with them, jingling change, all that stuff. It's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's pivot to Chris for a second. So Chris, where are you? Are you in Virginia?
No, I'm actually in Kingston, New York. So about 2 hours north of the city. I was down in Brooklyn for about 10 years. And in 2020, I made the move up to Kingston in the Hudson Valley and really never looked back. So I was ready to make a change, and came up here with my wife, and we just bought a house about a year ago. So that's been another project to work on outside of Dimple and Divot, but it's been, yeah, we love it up here. Lots of golf, easy. The course is about 5 minutes away from me, so it's a lot easier than to get out to Diker Beach and Douglaston and all those Van Cortlandt, those courses out in the city where you had to lug your golf bag and go up the subway, as I'm sure you are familiar with, Andrew.
For sure. Wait, so like, I had no idea you were in New York. I don't know why I thought you were states away. We're probably like 2 hours apart. We should meet in the middle and play golf.
Yeah. Actually, have you been to Innis?
Yes. Innis is cool.
Yeah. So I'm about 20 minutes from there.
Nice.
Which is like a super cool resort style nine hole course. That's, yeah, I thought they did a great job. Actually, didn't you have Collins on?
Yes, we had the King Collins guys on. Yeah, that was a cool one. That was a while ago. Wow, good memory. Petra, have you heard of Innis? It has like it's a very,
we have.
Yeah, it's nice. I wish that style of golf and modern, simple, very minimal Scandinavian, like that's,
yeah,
to me, that's what a golf shop experience. It's just simple and it like fits in with nature. I think it's vibey. Yeah.
Is it as good as it looks?
Yes. I think, okay, here's what I'll say. I think with that design aesthetic, I think sometimes there can be too much minimalism. I think the pro shop could be a little bit more cozy and have a few more elements. It feels a little bit more of like a plain concrete box with like, and look, they've done it really well.
Yeah. Have you gone this year at all? Or was it a couple years, like last year?
I went last year, so I haven't been this year. You've been recently?
They definitely made the pro shop a lot more cozier. They put in like a bar and all this like wood grain. They made it, because it was so empty and barren and very, yeah, Scandinavian style, but they did a good job with it. So
nice. Yeah, we got to get Petter over there to go play that place. It's fun. It's a short track. Yeah, nine holes, played twice, but it's like, it's what I wish there was more of in golf. I think my only other, it's good to hear that they have a bar. My dream, I was talking to someone about this the other day, but my dream vision for a golf course that I would be a member at, which doesn't exist in New York City, would be a place that looked like Innis. And then when you go into the pro shop, there would be a beautiful coffee bar so I can get amazing cortados. Like, we're not talking like, no, like, you know, coffee pods bullshit. Like, there's an espresso bar, a proper coffee bar where you can get nice coffee, maybe a small little cafe. I don't really care about the food. Maybe there's like snacks and stuff. A couple of things of gear, but again, nothing too crazy. I think that pro shops get too crazy on the gear. I can ramble on that for hours about efficiency. And then I would love a sauna or a steam room, one or the other, right? A barbershop. And that's it. And golf. And look, those things can be very small. Like, you can have one barber chair in the back of the locker room. Maybe you have to book it a week in advance. But when I think of what my Saturday looks like when I play golf, and also the things that like I need to do on like just daily basis or whatever, like, especially when it's colder, like it's a beautiful fall day today. A little steam room sauna after golf would be amazing. I don't know why they don't have more of those. One. And then a haircut is an essential thing. Like, I need to go get a haircut after this podcast is getting a little long. I keep mine low, but like, yeah, I would be like, check golf, check steam, check haircut, cortado. Outdoor.
If you could incorporate all your like daily errands into the, into a golf course or a pro shop, that would be the dream.
I agree. Yeah, that's it.
Do you have, Do you guys have any indoor places in New York or where you live, Nick, that's like that?
We have a lot of, like up here, there's one simulator place, which we play. I'm in a league up here, so it's nice. You know, you need something in the winter to keep your swing in check. But again, that's only, you know, 5 minutes away. So that's pretty convenient. But I know down in the city, they have like Five Iron and a bunch of other places.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Petter, over there? Do you guys have a lot of indoor golf facilities?
You know, they keep popping up more and more. But they're all pretty much the same. You know, it's the same golf aesthetic. And it doesn't, like, Kevin and I, who I started July with, we talked about this yesterday because we also dream about having that sort of the place that you just talked about, Andrew. But it doesn't exist. We keep looking at, you know, Rafa, the cycling brand?
Yes.
You know, they had these clubhouses.
Are they still around, by the way? Do you know?
You know, some are around. I know that they closed some of them, but it felt like a really cool thing. And it felt like something like that could work in the golf, like the golf segment as well.
Fascinating. I've never actually really thought about that. Well, I think maybe I've thought about it in very small doses years ago. Because again, back to the advertising days, I worked on Cannondale for a little bit, like the bike brand. And like, I think there was always some mood board with some Rafa stuff, but man, those guys killed it.
They killed it. Yeah.
When you talk about brand experience, yeah, there's nothing better. I mean, the clothes were very expensive. I think they had some issues with just, it's tricky when you look at businesses where there's the brand and then there's the business, and how do you elevate both at the same time? It's very hard and it's very challenging. Their brand was fire. Like another brand that I would compare this to, and I don't know what the numbers look like, but would be Ame Leondore. Like now the brand is fantastic. Like I've never bought an item from Ame Leondore. I probably only purchased because I'm not like a hardcore cyclist. I might have like two or three things from Rafa in my closet. But those brands are so cool. You just want to be associated with them. I think that's really interesting. And it also makes you think, like, you know, just the opportunity for something in that in golf, because on one hand, I feel like a lot of people see golf as this, like, and not to sound bad, but like mainstream and like commercial and kind of basic lens. But then when you look at what Rafa did for cycling, which is like when you compare the two activities, golfing and cycling probably have more similarities than golfing and football or golfing and soccer, where it's, you know, you might be doing it by yourself. Maybe most of the time you might have a very small group of guys that you ride with. And I think, yeah, I'm going to do a deep dive into Rafa just to see how much of that inspo I can pull over. Yeah. Cause they killed it.
So. They did. And it was very interesting. It was, you know, the cycling space was pretty similar in many terms to what the golf space was in terms of an industry being really focused on performance and, you know, the 1%, the people who actually earn money from doing the activity.
Right.
And Rafa just came in and, you know, they were great with colors. They were great with materials. And they said, you know, let's just stop. It's not about who crosses the finish line first, but it's about enjoying the ride. And it's really interesting.
Getting out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's great stuff. Sorry, I've been rambling. I got distracted. So one of the first things I always love to ask is a little bit about each of you, you know, what you do and how you started your respective brands. Maybe we pivot to Chris for a second. So how did you get into golf, Chris? And then what inspired you to create Dibble and Divot?
Yeah. So I got into golf at a pretty early age. My dad, you know, got us into golf. I have two younger brothers. One of them I've started Dibble and Divot with. So I kind of grew up golfing with my brothers and my dad, and it was like a nice little foursome. It was always like a built-in foursome that was great. And then I also am a designer, art director. So I graduated, and one of my first jobs was for Callaway and Izzo Golf. Are you familiar with Izzo?
No, I-Z-Z-O.
They're kind of like they're an old school brand. They haven't really updated their branding as much, but it was like, man, it was more than 10 years ago that I worked for them. But they were known for their patented backpack strap on the golf bags. So they were a golf bag brand, and they had a partnership with Callaway. And they did their like training accessories. So that was in Rochester, New York. And I worked for them basically as a packaging designer, catalog design stuff. And through that, I kind of like got back into it and like loved, you know, it was an easy excuse. There was like company tournaments and I really got back into golf, and then moved down to the city, and it was harder to golf, but it was still kind of made it out, like I said, trucked out there. And in 2020, I was supposed to get married in 2020, and I booked my bachelor party in Pinehurst, and it got canceled. And it was supposed to be April 2020. And, you know, Brooklyn was crazy. We were, you know, banging pots outside. I don't know if you remember with everything. Was pretty nuts. So we decided to book a place in Pinehurst. The Airbnb was heavily discounted. And we said, my wife and I said, screw it, let's go down. And we went down there and stayed a month, and my brother kind of met me down there, and we both were like, you know, we played on the cradle every single day and got to golf as much as we could. And we're like, why don't we start something? We did our research, and it wasn't until a couple months later that we really landed on a core product, which is the Hickory golf brush. And this thing was, you know, we were like, why is no one else doing this? It's just, everything was these cheap plastic brushes. You know, we gained some inspiration from brands like Bubba Whips and Best Made Co. and these companies that were just like really focusing on one thing and really well-crafted items. And we were like, you know, Nick basically handles all the sourcing and the product development and things like that. And I handled the creative marketing design with a lot of help from our spouses, Nick's fiance is in the garage with him, helping to fulfill orders and make brushes. And my wife's helping me with, she does social media strategy, and a lot of help from our family and stuff. So we were like, let's do this. And that was almost 3 years ago at this point. So.
Awesome. That's fantastic. I mean, you're bringing up a lot of memories. So Bubba Whips, another great brand. That was actually a side project by, do you know, a guy named John Moody, who runs Sentinel?
Very well. We've done collaborations with him.
Yeah. One of the nicest dudes there is. Yeah. That's another really fun brand.
Yeah.
I always think that I was thinking about this yesterday, but with golf brands, what you're doing, and definitely with what you're doing with July as well, Petter, which we'll talk about in a second. But like, I always think about just the world of brands. And I was having a conversation with a guy about just all the brands that are popping up in golf now. And on one hand, you could argue that there's too many people doing too many things, which, you know, there's good and bad. It depends on how you look at it. On the other hand, at least, you know, my optimistic viewpoint of that is that I think when you see people taking it upon themselves to do things, that shows you that the category or the world, like there's something that people want within that space that doesn't exist. So they're literally taking it upon themselves to make it. Like, and don't get me wrong, every once in a while, I'll see some random brand pop up on Instagram, or there's some dude that, you know, he made a fanny pack or tote bag and put, you know, a golf club pattern on it. Like, on one hand, it's like, okay, like, I applaud the effort. That's cool. Maybe that's not my vibe. But at the same time, it's like, the larger question that I ask is that if the mainstream brands were making these things, no one would do them. But if if people are taking it upon themselves to make this stuff, it tells you that like golf is changing and people are looking for something different, something more modern, something more simple. So I've always found that interesting.
Yeah.
Could yeah, more. Definitely. We always try to ask like, does this serve a purpose? And, you know, I feel like the last, you know, if it's the last thing we want to do is come out with something that's, there's something like that already out there, or there's like a copycat of another thing. And, you know, I think the last thing the golf world needs is another, you know, crazy printed polo shirt. But we try to be purposeful with everything we do.
Right, for sure. That purpose is key. And don't get me wrong, I think that like, I don't know, I think copycats are good and bad. Like if you're ripping off someone like just exactly what they're doing, that's not cool, right? Then you're just being shady. But at the same time, I think there's also room in some categories for people to coexist if you're doing complementary things. So anyways, because I do think a little bit of golf, there is a little bit of that thinking where at least me coming into the space now, like I've never worked in golf before. Have either of you, is this your first kind of like foray into the golf space?
Just working with the Callaway and Izzo, and that was basically it. But so I've worked in mostly in CPG and other, you know, in the advertising space in New York. And I've always wanted to get back to it. So that was like really what was personally driving me to co-found Dimple and Divot.
Got it. Interesting. What about you, Petter? Is this your first? Well, we didn't unpack yours yet. Let's unpack you and then we'll talk about this. Cause I think this is,
it's definitely the first.
Yeah. I think this is it's a very fascinating thing that I think about a lot. But yeah, tell us the July story, but also start with telling us what happened with the match, because you guys don't know this. So basically, there are two members of the July sporting team, and just to keep the podcast streamlined, we were like, look, let's just have one person on. So we recommended a match in the sim because it's snowing over there. Just so how did the match go down? Where did you guys play? What was the format? Give us the full breakdown.
So, you know, the snow came yesterday. That was the big snow day. So it's suddenly now it's winter, like from one day to the other.
Brutal.
And it's quite brutal. It is. It seems the transition is just like that. It happens in a second. I've had this injury in my foot for the entire season. So I haven't been able to play. And Kevin has actually played quite a lot. So the second that you guys said that we should play a match, I felt a little like I sent him a message and I said, you know, this is going to be a walkover. Like you're taking it. So we're members at the same place. So we went there, they have this indoor facility. And we played because I can't really put too much weight on my foot. So we played just a simple 9-hole par 3 course. All the holes are about 100 yards.
Okay.
And we played just a simple match. And it was a little bit back and forth. And then I absolutely stiffed it on 7 and went one up. And then because I don't know about you guys, but we don't like putting on simulators.
No, it's the worst.
It's a waste of time. Yep. So we just, you know, switch on, go to settings, and we just switch on. I think it's called Auto Pro or
Auto. Yep.
Yeah. Yes.
And Kevin was a little bit unlucky and 3-putted from 4 yards.
Oh no!
The game was decided by chance, but I'll take it. I needed a little bit of luck.
I love it. That's great.
Injured and all, you triumph. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That's outstanding. Yeah. And then, so tell us how, I guess, like what inspired you guys to start July?
I got into golf really young through my dad when I was about 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. He took me to the course and he got me my first club, which was a 7-iron with a smiley face on it.
Love it.
And I think Kevin was about the same. Kevin is almost 15 years older than me. So even though we've lived in the same area, we've never actually met until about 5 years ago.
Oh, cool.
So I met Kevin when I had just graduated from SVA and I moved back to Oslo and I wanted to get a job in branding because I quickly realized that New York wasn't where I wanted to stay. I had a girlfriend through 10 years that I needed to get home to as well. So I went back home, and then I came across this really low-key company that seemed like they were doing a lot of cool stuff. And I applied for a job, and Kevin was the boss. Nice. So he hired me, and I've worked with him ever since. And when we started working together, we just kind of, even though there was an age difference, we just kind of bonded over things that we liked and things that we didn't really feel made sense. He also had this, you know, he's 15 years older, so he's understood a couple of things that I hadn't quite understood yet. You know, he knew about some brands, he knew about some places, he knew about some hotels that I didn't know about. And we just started bonding and quickly realized that we had been members at the same golf club forever, been kind of walking, like probably passing each other for the last 20 years. And then we just started talking about what a golf brand would be in if we did it. And, you know, both Kevin and I will happily admit that we like nice things. We like that, you know, we like how things feel. We want products to make us feel good. We want them to age well. We just didn't feel like there was a brand in golf that really was like that. There was a lot of new brands. We started talking about this back in 2018, probably. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of new brands, but we just felt like nobody was really taking quality as seriously as we would have liked them to. And we started looking at what we could do with that.
Nice. Question, because I think about this also a lot, and then we'll pivot back to my other question. But things in golf that are meant to age with time, like you're wearing that sweatshirt, which, by the way, I almost pulled out today. Like I, and the reason why I didn't put it on yet, well, it's a little cold. I actually might change my mind. Was that most of my closet is blue. It's like 95% navy blue and black. And then I've got like a little green and red and whatever. And I also organize my closet by color because I'm crazy. But every once in a while, I try to tell myself to like, not wear, I'm like, dude, you're wearing navy blue again today. Seriously. But it's just good. But yeah, it works. Yeah. You're wearing a blue chambray shirt. It just works. What do each of you guys think about things in golf that are meant to last, that look good with time and aging, and then things that are meant to be disposable? Like, I have thoughts on this stuff, cause I'm sure you think about this intention with a lot of the things that you guys make better, and also with Dimple. But yeah, what's your perspective on that? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I automatically go to one of our favorite brands. That's like Mackenzie golf bag. And I feel like a good wax canvas golf bag is like, there's nothing better than that. It's made to last. You know, they've been making it for so long. They just like have it, that everything that they do, I feel like works. So the leather patinas, the wax canvas looks great. And then as far as like what what doesn't work, or what could you like switch out pretty regularly, I feel like towels are, you know, at least ours, I feel like they're the first to get pretty dingy and gritty. There's nothing like a fresh golf towel on the bag.
What about you, Peter?
This is really interesting, because you can look at something like tees and you know that they're going to break. You're going to break like five or six through a round. But there's also something really satisfying about somebody who's put effort into a tee. It makes you weirdly happy, or it makes me weirdly happy.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. We love wooden tees. But I can't imagine using a plastic tee now. But yeah, I know July's tees are great. You guys like have the half white, half wood tees that I think look super awesome.
Yeah, a good tee is just something like, because you're using arguably 18 of them during a round. I go through a lot of tees. I just break everything. I hit a lot of fat shots. Right,
they're steep.
Yeah,
hang down steep.
Way too steep. We're working on that. I took a lesson last week, and we were talking about attack angle, and like She was like, dude, you got to get it flat. So we're doing some drills this week just to get that angle down. A good tee is very satisfying. And there's a couple of brands now that have been leaning into sustainability. There's one that makes tees out of bamboo. I forget the name of the company, but the copy that they have on the box. And look, I'm sure there's a little bit of marketing involved in this, but their whole thing is like, this golf tee will grow in a day. Just because, you know, bamboo is, I think, the most sustainable wood on the planet. It grows really fast. So I thought that's really interesting just to be able to use that and bring it into the golf space. So,
our tees are bamboo as well.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
And it's, you know, it grows really fast and it's really, really strong. So the intention is that you're not going to break as many as if you just go to your local shop and buy whatever, which is true. Maybe not you, Andrew, with your angle of attack.
I know.
So it will definitely I told my dad this. It's funny because my dad is about 70 and he's played golf in his entire life. And I told him that, you know, we made them from bamboo so that you're not going to break as many. And he just looked at me and he was like, that's a terrible business decision.
Yeah. I know. We've made some like decisions in like the brush making process too about sustainability. And I feel like, you know, we could have gone down the route of the metal bristles versus the nylon bristles, and like, you know, the metal just gets eaten up really fast and gets pretty gnarly. And so we, you know, the nylon really does last for much longer. And, you know, that compared on top of like the hickory wood that we made a choice to use that, and it's for its strength, for its like history in golf. So definitely those choices were made within the, like the sustainability factor too.
Yeah. I love it. Now, because I was just to go back to my other question, but like this idea of things that are, like, I'll share my POV, but like things in golf that I think are meant to, that look better with age. Like, I love a good sweatshirt. I love a good hoodie and a t-shirt. Like when those things are like old and worn, they're just better, right? Even with hats, like this hat is actually, I'm actually going to try to do an Instagram post about how to make your own hat, but I made this hat. It's this brand that doesn't exist anymore called Fair Ends. And did it even have, it might've just been a blank, or maybe it had like another weird logo on it. But basically I found this hat and I just love the fit of it. And I found this vintage, like St. Andrew's patch on eBay. And then I ripped the,
you chain. Stitched it?
Well, I didn't stitch it because I can sew decently. Yeah. Like, cause I remember from sixth grade home ec, we had to sew and I made a soccer ball and it was decent, but like my own OCD will look at my stitch lines and not be pleased if, and it's a circle. So like, just if the stitch lines aren't even, and if I push or pull too deep, like I can mend a sock, but like I would have to look at this. So I was like, so I basically, I just walked into, it's New York City. I walked into a dry cleaner. I was like, hey, can you sew this? And they did it in like 10 minutes. And it was great. So I'm going to try to make, I was going to try to make some more of these. Just because like there are very few hats in the market that I love style fit wise. And then also like, I try not to wear a lot of the kind of like, here's a hat with a big logo just cause it's like not really my vibe. Like I like these hats because they feel a little bit more like personal. So anyways, but I love a good hat. I love when golf clubs get aged. I think they look better. I don't really care what the club is. They just look cool with time. So it is interesting. But you're right about a towel. A clean towel is very satisfying.
You know, we couldn't agree more about the sweatshirts and the, you know, the t-shirt and the polo. When that has, that's the reason why we Garmin dye all our products. Because mm-hmm. we want them to have that worn in feel. Because it just feels, it feels worn in from day one. And it just gives it a rich color. And it just like a little bit of a vintage feel. And, you know, if you like that, it's really nice.
Yeah, it's a really good aesthetic. And I think there's this window with clothing where you first get it and it's almost like a car. Like you first get it and you're obsessed with it and it's brand new and it's fresh out the pack. And that first try on feeling is amazing. And then the journey begins of actually developing a relationship with that garment, at least for me, because I'm a nerd about this stuff, is that The first wash is the first step, right? Because it's like, is this relationship going to work, right? Is this going to work, right? And then you make it through the first, you make it through the first wash, the fit still feels good. And then you're happy with that. And then just kind of like the ride as that piece gets older and older. I love when like you have a go-to reliable piece of thing, like a thing that's always, it's a great feeling. I think about that a lot.
There's something about, you know, we pre-wash our polos and sweatshirts just so that the fit is predictable. So the second, you know, just like you're talking about now, there's nothing worse than picking up something from the store and then you love it, but then you wash it once and something's creeping up your back. Yeah.
It just changes. Yeah.
It's brutal. Right. Especially when you liked it out of the bag. You're like, oh, that's a bummer. Right.
Yeah. It's a more expensive process.
Yeah, for sure. It is. But it's when brands invest in it, which you guys do, which I love, it pays off. By the way, Chris, do you guys have any more of those burnt wood brushes? They're gone, right?
They're gone. Yeah, they went pretty fast. But that was a fun project that we did. That we did 15 of them. So it's this process called yakisugi, which is basically the torched wood, a Japanese method of like torching wood that's they used probably like 200 years ago, and it's supposed to like strengthen the wood, but it also looks awesome. And I have one right here that I don't want to make any promises, but we're probably going to do another batch of them because they sold out so quick. But
nice.
Yeah, the black looks pretty sweet on the bag.
Yeah, I was gonna say, what would we have to do to convince you to make another run?
Well, I'm gonna have to talk to Nick, but I don't think it would take too much pressuring from me to have it done because everyone loves them. So,
because the process is pretty cool. Because I and I don't think me being in Japan. Maybe it did brought this up, but I was talking to a friend about this burnt wood thing. Like he was thinking about just having some burnt wood panels inside of his house. And he was talking about the process and like how it works. And then I was like, oh, that's fascinating. I didn't realize that's actually how it's done. And like just the whole process of torching it and then like the ash and all that. Like it's an interesting process and it actually just looks cool. I didn't realize that it actually strengthens the wood.
Yeah, it's supposed to. And I wish Nick was here to talk more about it, but it took him like, it's a lot harder of a process than I think we originally thought it would be. Cause it's like, because of, I think it's mainly for, you know, bigger pieces of wood. So there's some, you know, you can torch it and it can kind of, you know, give and take with the wood, but with such a smaller piece of wood, it does kind of shrink the wood in some instances. And then we have to worry about like bristling and making sure that the, you know, the width of the handle is still wide enough to put bristle holes in. So it was definitely some trial and error, but yeah, they came out pretty sweet.
Dope. That's cool. Now that we've talked a little bit about New York, but we didn't talk about Norwegian golf courses. So Petter, you're in Oslo?
Yep.
Got it. What's the golf vibe over there? Because I've never been to Norway.
It's a lot better than I think most people think it is, right? It's always better. You know, we have great courses, but we don't have too many. We have a few local tracks. I have a little local, like, 9-hole course just down the road from my house where I take my kids. Nice. So we have that one, and then we have other, you know, we have pretty much all levels, which is really nice. And it's a short, like, for us driving, for example, going to Sweden, it's just a short ride. Like it's, you drive for 3 hours, you can get to Sweden and you can play Barsebäck, which is a really high quality course played on the European tour. And you can play a lot of these. Henrik Stenson has designed a course down there. So, you know, you have a lot of opportunity.
Cool. Is that your favorite course over there?
I played Barsebäck once. It's an incredible place. I had a few friends that went over there a couple of weeks ago and said that it's still incredible. But I grew up as a member at a pretty special course, which is a private members course right out in the ocean outside of Oslo. Mm-hmm. So it's on an island. So you have to take your boat out.
Oh, take your boat out? Does everybody have a boat over there?
most of the people that are members at that club have a boat, I have to admit.
Love it. That's fantastic.
So it's located on an island. It's an incredible place. It's called Osten Country Club. It's an 18 holes. Victor Hovland played there last summer. I think he shot the course record, of course.
Who's, oh, cool.
That's probably not surprising.
There you go.
I know Susan Pedersen is there quite often. So it's a special place for sure. And it's actually the place, both Kevin and I are country club kids. Like, we grew up on the country club. And I think none of us really fitted in. So we are sort of like the insiders of this whole, like, we've been looking at this problem with golf being elitist from the inside and feeling like it should change. So it's been interesting to be on that side, because it's, you know, most people are on the other side.
For sure.
So it's but it's an incredible place. Sometimes we forget how incredible it actually is. So special track.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I need to make my way over that to that side of the world. One other question, and let's start with the Norwegian perspective, and then we'll pivot to the upstate perspective. One of the things that I am very curious about is that when people play golf, do you, like, just that social circle, right? I think being a golfer in New York forces you to play golf with strangers. But then I've had conversations with people like in the UK and on Australia, and a lot of other countries have a tendency to only play golf. Like, I had a buddy that lives in the UK, and he was like, I play golf every week with the same three guys. That's it. And I was like, really? And he was like, yeah. And I was like, well, culturally, like, do people do that? And I was just like, that was like, that's interesting to me, because for me, I like a little bit of both. Like, I like playing with friends. Like, I played, just me and a buddy played on Saturday, just me and him, just a twosome, and went out on his cloak. And that was great. And I love that. But then also, I like playing rounds with three complete strangers, because there's something kind of like very off the grid about it. But a lot of golfers, I've learned, aren't really into that. Do you guys prefer either way? Do you play with the same people? Do you mix it up? Do you not like strangers? I don't know. What's your take?
I think it's fairly well known and joked about that Scandinavians aren't the most social people. Like, we will happily not sit next to each other if we have the option.
That's funny.
But I think, you know, it depends. I'm a member at probably, both Kevin and I are members at Oslo Golf Club, which is just 10 minutes from where we live. And it's a really, it's one of the nicest courses in the country, and it's very popular. It has a waiting list of about 8-9 years.
Whoa.
Yeah, exactly. So there's not that many places to play. So when there's a really nice one, a lot of people want to get in for sure.
Nice.
But it's an incredible place. Again, that's a very open, it's close to the water, and it's very open. And I know Victor Hovland played there. Well, he often plays there. He played there this summer, and I think he was about, don't quote me on this, but I think he was about 12 or 13 under after 14 holes. So it's, he demolished the place.
Yeah, clearly.
But it's very busy. So there, that's a place where everybody's very used to playing with other people. But I would say, you know, at the age where I'm at now, where I'm 35, and I don't get to see my friends as much as we probably used to, we tend to play with the same people. I tend to play with the same people.
Sure. What about you, Chris?
I feel like I have a mixed feeling for this. I in the same way, Petter, I like, you know, I've got my golf trips planned, and like, love, you know, love golfing with the boys and my brothers and dad. And but like, on a day, you know, on like a weekly basis, I've got a couple buddies around here that belong to some local clubs. And then I belong to a 9-hole club here too. So I'm pretty open about golfing with new people. Like, if I just, last Friday, it was like beautiful out, and it is a private club, but it's like, you know, I don't know. I still am like meeting new people, and you know, I just moved up here, so I'm still meeting a lot of people in the area. And mm-hmm. It was like three people, or two other people that came out because it was a beautiful day on Friday. and sort of like, you know, planning to do the same thing I was planning to do. Put your headphones in and walk nine and just play by yourself. But we were all like going teeing off. We're like, why don't we just play together? You know, I've never met one of the guys, one of the other guys I had met before. But yeah, it was just like a nice, you know, it was an enjoyable thing, which I was expecting just to play by myself, which I also, you know, don't have an issue with too. Sometimes those are also great rounds if you can play by yourself early in the morning and get a cup of coffee in and walk nine. Those are some great rounds as well.
There we go. Cup of coffee from the espresso bar at the pro shop.
Yeah. That's the plan. Yep.
That is the dream. It's the best thing ever, right? There needs to be more coffee in golf and then a haircut. There's nothing better. I'm just saying. Or even one of those, you know, like now we're coming back to Rafa. Rafa had, I remember seeing photos of like, I don't know if it was a mobile espresso bar, but I think it was. They had one of those old vintage Citroens. Or Citroens, I'm not pronouncing this correctly, but I think they modified it into an espresso bar. That I remember, like, because I remember from my ad days, we would always pull that reference, and like a lot of brands were starting using those things for pop ups. But like a little mobile, little pop up truck at the turn for coffee, whatever. Yeah, we need someone to fund this dream for us. All we need is, how much money do we need to raise? We could do this. It could be a thing.
Yeah, I mean, for us, coffee is always, coffee and golf is just. Like it's a match made in heaven for us. It's we did the graphics for, we were in talks with this really nice coffee house down in Oslo. Mm-hmm. And we did the graphics for it, and we were going to call it Early Bird. And then Random released a coffee blend which was called Early Bird, actually.
Yeah,
that's really? How it goes. That's how it goes. But
that's how it goes.
Yeah, that's how it goes. But we always, you know, I don't know about you guys, but around here, like, good coffee and golf doesn't necessarily go together. Like, usually we bring our own, like, to make sure it's nice.
Oh, okay.
Totally.
Oh, yeah.
I'm with that.
There's something magical about having, like, really good coffee. You know that you have your little thermos, and then you have really nice coffee on it. And then if you have to wait 10 minutes, play or 5 minutes, you can just sit down on a bench and you know that it's smoking hot. It's a special moment.
Right. How are we making coffee? Let's talk about that for a second. Are you going, is it drip? Are you Chemex? Is it Americano? What's the style? What are we talking here?
I don't think I have the patience for drip. I know Kevin did a lot of drip in his days, but we do, you know, grind the beans and then we have the classic, what is it called? Is drip? For you guys, is drip when you pour? No, pour.
Pour over? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pour over.
Yeah.
Okay. So drip is just like you grind them and then it's down into a pot, right?
Yeah. The machine where it just, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's drip.
Yeah. Drip is
don't
good.
Have yeah. The, yeah. I don't have the patience for pour, but drip is good.
I totally get that. I am a pour over guy. I do use a Chemex, but. Sometimes I like it. I mostly try to make cold brew in the summer and have that ready just for convenience. But yeah, there's nothing like freshly ground beans.
Yeah, I agree. I was hard on the cold brew until I had a child, or the pour over Chemex method. I was,
the timing just goes out the window.
Yeah, that was my ritual, and then I had a child, and then that went out the window. Every once in a while, I'll pull it out of the back of the cabinet. It's all dusty, and just do it because I like the ritual of it. But now it's very much like either espresso, Americano. It's about speed. How fast can I get the best cup of coffee in the least amount of time? There's also like another brand here in the States that makes little pods. Now it's like, it's basically espresso shots that are frozen. It's called, you've probably heard of these guys, Chris, called Comateer.
No, I don't think I have.
Yeah. So you order it and then basically it comes to your house frozen and there's like a little box and the design is actually really cool. I'll send you guys a picture of it because it's actually pretty sick. It's like beautifully designed. And like, it tastes great. So you just thaw it out, add water, and it's really good. It's really good.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. It's not bad. Yeah. I think basically what they're probably doing is they're partnering with coffee houses and then they're figuring out a way to either pre-make espresso and then like flash freezing it. And then
got it.
Yeah, beautiful design aesthetic. Probably not the most eco because there's a lot of packaging involved, but like it comes in handy in a pinch when you've got a 4-year-old running around at 6 a.m. screaming. So, you know, that's the vibe. One more question to wrap up, because I know I have a meeting with our app developers very soon. Can you guys each tell us a little bit about, or if there's any things coming out from your brands that people can keep an eye out for?
Yeah, there's nothing specific, but I will say, like, you know, we're always trying to iterate on top of, you know, our product and always trying to make, you know, we make the original Hickory golf brush and we're always trying to like better it. We've had, you know, 4 or 5 different iterations since we launched. And so we're always coming out with new stuff. And we're going to try to like focus on that product. We get kind of distracted with other products that come in, but we're trying to like, you know, definitely stick with that, but also collaborate with other brands, both golf brands and other brands, and you know, have them put a spin on a golf brush, or you know, potentially put our spin on another golf product. So we're always open to collaborating with other like-minded golf brands, for sure.
Cool. What about you, Petter? Anything coming up for the holiday season you guys are putting out there?
You know, we're working on right now we're working on all aspects of the brand because we're young and we feel like we've gotten it to a good place, but we know where we want it to go. So at the moment, we're continuously just working on everything from our like identity to packaging and labeling and production partners and everything, just to move the brand further, because we don't want to buy products and put a label on it. We want to create something that can really stand the test of time. And we are just in a process now where we are really pushing ourselves to take everything to a new level. Awesome. And in terms of products, we're working on a water repellent jacket. We found this company in Sweden, which makes incredible tech fabrics that almost feel like they don't look like tech, but they are so stretchy and completely water repellent. And it's been pretty fascinating. And it's always fun when you can find partners that are close to home,
because mm-hmm.
it just adds mm-hmm. more value and more soul into the brand, I feel.
For sure.
And we've been in contact with factories in the UK for wool sweaters, and we're diving deep into production at the moment and just trying to really ramp up everything.
Very cool.
And we feel like, yeah, we've kind of looked at the space now and gotten the feeling that golf has become almost, there's a lot of brands in the casual space, because that was sort of where a lot of new brands, that was where they honed it in, and they tried to make golf more casual. And we just feel like maybe, you know, there's still nothing wrong with the polo. We still love our polo. It's very natural to us to have a polo as a golf brand. We think it's timeless, and it's always been good, and it will always be good. But we will continue to work on the brand and perhaps make it, we keep calling it, maybe internally we call it like a casual elegance. You know, you have those guys that are just like put together.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of the vibe that we want to push the brand into. It's nothing snobby about it. It's just really good things.
Yeah, that's it. It needs to be simple. No, I love that. Yeah, I'll definitely be keeping an eye out, because we can do another complete episode on rain gear and jackets and how 95% of the options in the market are just not cool. But it's totally doable. So yeah, we'll record that one next time.
We found some great inspiration in some running brands. Running brands are really interesting to look at when it comes to jackets.
Yeah, because they understand movement and they understand the technicality of it. Fascinating. Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks for the time, guys. That was it.
But thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Fair Game Podcast. If you haven't already, You can hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever service you may be using. We've also launched the Fair Game app, golf's first digital clubhouse, the place to play your game and connect with golfers across the country. You can find it in the App Store or on Google Play. You can also find us on Instagram at Fair Game Golf and check out some of our original videos on our YouTube page. You can find all these links in the podcast episode details. We'll see you next time.